Welcome back, everyone, to the Dark Forest. I have gathered a few little spooky tales to share with you tonight around the campfire. Make sure you download your favorite scary story on my Apple Podcast and Spotify. Tales from the Dark Forest. A shout out to my patrons and my channel members, especially Voltron76 and Matthew Bauer. Now, let's get spooky. I've been living rough for about a year now. It's not as bad as you think, not really. When COVID hit, I lost my job. The food industry got hit pretty hard, and the catering business I worked for had suddenly closed up shop. When I couldn't pay for my rent, my crappy landlord put me out on the street. I suppose I could have gone and gotten an assistance check, but I met some guys at the local soup kitchen I was crashing at, and they invited me to come live rough with them. For the last 9 months, I've been traveling from town to town with this great group of guys who have been homeless for years. I know this makes me sound like a tourist, but it's really not as bad as you'd think, and I've been enjoying a freer lifestyle than I ever have. The four guys I traveled with kept an eye on me. They all called me a kid, and I'm lucky to have fallen into them. Travis is a vet from Iraq, who couldn't seem to live in an apartment after spending 6 months in some Iraqi prison. He's a rough guy, but very protective of his squad, which I guess is us. Conley is more like your classic tramp. He's old enough to be my granddad, and seems to get by mostly on panhandling. He could be very charming, and he's admirable enough, whether he's drunk or sober, and he's more than happy to share what he makes with the rest of us. Then, of course, there's John. Of the three, I think John is the one I like the most. He reminds me of my dad somehow. He's tall and thin, with bushy eyebrows and a thick salt-and-pepper beard. He works as a handyman sometimes to make money, and he seems to keep a perpetual eye on all of us. Despite Conley being 15 years older than him, you could tell that he's thought of all of us as his kids. He was very protective of us, and I spent many nights around a campfire with the three of them. John was always at the head of the fire, like a father at his table, and we often told stories as we hunkered around our camp. On the night in question, we were telling scary stories. We had camped out in the woods off of the interstate, far enough in that our fire wouldn't be seen from the road, and we were eating the food that we had brought and telling tales. Conley was talking about a ghost story he had heard in Denver, and Travis told us a ghost soldier spotted around the barracks he was assigned to. I told one of the many creepypastas I had read during my other life, and finally, we looked to John. John had been eating quietly through it all, and now seemed intent on continuing his dinner. "Your turn, Dad," I said, using the teasing nickname I had fixed on him. "I don't really like to tell scary stories," he said, and his voice had a hollow tone to it as he busied himself with his can of stew. "Come on, John," said Conley, already sounding like his dinner was affecting him. "We all told one. Now it's your turn." I was sitting next to John at his right hand, and I saw him darken a little as Conley poked him. "Easy, Conley. If John doesn't want to tell a story, then he doesn't." "Fine. You guys want a story? I've got a story for you." John sounded a little mad, and Conley raised his hand as he told him that it was fine. "It's a great story. I think you'll love it. Gather up, kids. This one's a real doozy." He reached over and took the bottle of rot gut from Conley, taking a deep swig before starting. He sounded flustered, out of sorts, and I kinda didn't want him to tell it now. Clearly, something was going on here that was outside the norm, and I was afraid of what might happen after this story was told. Wanted or not, though, John began. It was a night much like tonight. The August wind was creeping from the east, cold and hungry as the boys sat around their campfire, munching on their dinner of beans. They didn't have the luxury of a home or a hearth, only having each other in this world. Their parents had casted them out, not having enough money to feed them any longer, and the two boys had been riding the rails, seeking their fortunes as they tried to make it day by day. The two boys had managed to beg enough for a can of beans, and as they sat around the fire, they listened to the bubbling inside their stomachs growling and their mouths watered. They hadn't eaten in 3 days, you see, and the smell of the beans was enough to make them ravenous. They sat closer to the fire, basking in the smell of the cooking beans. And that's when they heard the cry. The two huddled close to the fire, shuddering as the howling glided up from between the trees. Their campfire wavered under the torrent of the wind, and they hunkered close as they tried to keep it alive. They blocked it with their bodies, feeling the ice bit of the wind as they tried to cook their dinner. The howling growled across their shivering skin, and the two boys wondered if this would be their last meal. The beans began to boil over the lip of the can, and the older boy's threadbare gloves allowed them to slide it from the flames. He poured the beans into a tin cup for his brother, gritting his teeth as the heat became too hot for his gloved hand. As he poured, he could feel something stalking behind him. It had smelled their food and came to have a look. If they were lucky, it was a small cat or even a mangly dog that would leave if they shouted. If they weren't, then the older boy would stand against it while his brother ran. Either way, the two would eat a few mouthfuls of beans before they died. He wrapped his scarf around the can gingerly, holding by the tatty garment as he sipped the scalding beans into his mouth. They burned his tongue and blistered his throat, but his hunger was too great to wait. His brother moaned in pain as he did the same, the two of them feeding their bodies as the scalding food nourished them. And all the while, the beast howled and stalked behind them. Neither boy looked into the dark woods. They knew that something was stalking them, that something wanted them desperately. But they thought that if they just ignored it, it might just pass them by. As it moved around them, the oldest could see that it was like a dog. It capered around on all fours, its teeth bone white as it grinned at them. It stalked their little fire, circling the pair 3 times before stopping. It stood between the two, its narrow-shaped head pushing in close. The two boys ate, trying to ignore it, not wanting to see it and hoping it would just pass by. When it spoke, the younger of the two began to cry in terror.
"You came into my woods, bring your destructive fire, and then you don't even offer me a proper gift? What rude children you are. I should punish you for such insolence."
The boys begged the creature, saying they had nothing to give. The creature scoffed.
"You should have thought of that before you entered my woods."
The two begged him for mercy, to take pity on 2 poor starving boys.
"Mercy is not a trait I ever saw a need to learn," the beast said, laughing as he said it. "Those who enter my realm bring me gifts. You will present me with the gift, or you will suffer my wrath."
He spoke with a sense of refinement that was at odds with his monstrous nature. The boys still had not summoned up enough courage to look at him, and now they shuddered against each other as they thought of what to do. The oldest looked at the still warm can in his hand and saw that he had 2, possibly 3 bites of beans left. He held them out to the creature, still not looking at it, and hoped it would be enough. The creature approached, sniffing at the can, and a weight slid into the warm vessel. It slurped as its long tongue lapped at the beans, smacking as it tasted the juices and liking what he found.
"Lovely," the creature purred,
turning his head towards the younger, who had begun to shake.
And you?
Share with me what is in your cup, little one, and you might be allowed to live through the night.
The youngest had his hand over his mouth of the cup, unwilling to move it. The brother told him to give the creature a taste, and then they could leave this place and never come back. The younger boy shook his head again. The creature put his face very close to the boy and demanded that he remove his hand in a growling manner. The boy's shaking hand slid from the cup's opening, and his older brother felt his stomach drop. The younger had wolfed his beans, eating them all, and had nothing to show but a cup of juice residue. The older could see his tears cutting lines down his dirty face, leaving trails of pink against his skin. He stared, apologizing hastily and low to the other brothers, saying he couldn't help himself. As the creature asked for his due, the younger could do little but hold out his shaking, empty cup for the beast to inspect. The tongue slid inside, the metal sounding gloopy as the creature searched for food. And as it slid out, the two heard the creature tutting disappointedly.
"What a shame," it said,
and suddenly the warmth of his brother's forehead was gone, and the forest was filled with the sounds of his younger brother screaming. The older brother curled into a ball, shuddering and weeping as he heard his brother torn to pieces. He closed his eyes and begged God to make it over, but it was some time before the forest was quiet again. He laid there listening to the wind howl, his campfire guttering out as he shivered in the dark, alone. The three of us sat speechless, looking at John as the campfire cracked before him. Out in the woods, an animal loosened a long, mournful howl, and Conley suddenly decided to sleep under a nearby overpass. "It's chilly, but at least I won't get eaten up by no beast," Travis agreed, and the two grabbed their stuff and moved off.
"Better go join them," John said, poking at the fire as he looked into the flames.
"Sounds like an old friend is looking for his due." I heard something in his words that I didn't like. Something akin to a suicidal friend telling you it's fine to leave them alone. But I got up and followed the others anyways. The last time I saw John, he was still staring into the flames. We looked for him the next day, but he was nowhere to be found. We found the old campsite, we found his pack, but there was no sign of John. By midday, we just assumed he had left, and we moved on. I'm still not entirely sure what happened to him, but if you meet John on the road somehow, tell him his old troop misses him, and if you meet the creature from his story, I hope you save some beans. Otherwise, you may discover what really happened to John on the windy August night by the interstate. Okay, this is something that I experienced a few years back. During the summer break, my sister and I were visiting our aunt who lived in the country. Her house is located in a fairly wooded area, but there are several neighbors around. There's a man-made lake about a mile away from my aunt's place, and it is pretty much surrounded by woods. Me and my sister loved to walk around the lake whenever we visited our aunt when we were small kids, so this time too, we decided to go for a walk. It was about 5 p.m. and the sun was shining brightly. We were told not to walk alone near the lake, because there could be a wild animal or poachers or whatnot. But we decided that we were old enough to go alone, 15 and 13 years old. So we sneaked out while the adults were chatting in the living room and strolled along the path to the lake. The air is fresh, the sun is bright, and we're feeling like we could take over the world. We were walking along the wooded path to the lake when my phone rang. It was my mom, who was at my aunt's. Because we snuck out without telling them and we were almost at the lake, I didn't answer it and put the phone into silent mode. Stupid, I know. When we got to the lake, we took off our shoes and socks and dipped our feet into the cool water. We talked for some time, regular teenage stuff. I was telling a joke to my sister when this horrible feeling washed over me. It was like I was being watched. I instantly whipped my head around because I thought there was a perv or something stalking us. But there was no one around. My sister, too, seemed to be spooked by something. She asked me, "Did you feel that?" And I said yes. We sat there for a few minutes, holding each other's hands and our hearts in our throats, but nothing happened. The feeling eventually went away, so we just brushed it off. After some time, we got bored and decided to search for something to eat. The woods around the lake were practically full of wild berries, so we decided to go pick some. I found a nice patch of berries not far from the tree line, and we quickly started picking them up and shoving them into our mouths. I had finished up half of the berries I'd picked when I noticed a really cool bug on a leaf. I wanted to snap a photo of it because I have never seen anything like that before. I searched for my pockets for my phone, and it wasn't there. My sister asked what was wrong, and soon we both started crawling around searching for the phone. It was a fairly new one and quite expensive, so I absolutely did not want to lose it. "Don't freak out, sis," my sister M said. "Let's just give it a ring. If it's nearby, we'll hear it." She took her phone out and called my number. Instantly, my ringing tone started going off to the left of us. It was near the path we took into the forest, and it was pretty loud. So I took a step to go and retrieve it, but M grabs me by the wrist and stops me. "You turned the silent mode on, didn't you?" she asked me with a shaking voice. That's when it dawns upon me. I was 100% sure I'd turned it on. If the phone is silent, then what the hell is making the ringing tone? Then we realize that the entire forest is silent other than my ringing tone. Dead frickin' silence. My sister's grip on my wrist tightens. We look at each other with sheer terror in our eyes. Suddenly, the ringing stops in silence. We waited for another 10 seconds. That's when we heard it. My aunt called out to us from somewhere deep in the woods.
"M, T, I'm here."
We froze. It sounded like our aunt, but my gut told me that it wasn't. Something was off about it, like the usual emotions were absent. It was almost mechanical, like someone mimicking something he had heard before. Then the voice called out again. This time, it was definitely wrong. It was closer to an animal trying to speak. I cried at M, "Run!" So we ran. Ran like hell was loose, a frickin' demons were driving us out of the woods. During the time we ran, I could hear something following us, hot on our heels. Twigs snapping, leaves crunching, and occasional screeching noises. Almost like a wildcat, but far more sinister. It reeked of evil. We ran past the lake as fast as we could and finally reached the pebbled road where several vehicles were parked. The woods had ended there. We were out of breath and scared to the core. I turned around to look, but there was nothing. Several people gave us concerned looks, but no one asked anything. We walked with the group of folks who were heading in the direction we needed to go. We kept looking around, but the usual sounds were there, like birds singing. When we got home, we were immediately grounded. We were not allowed to go for walks for the rest of the time we stayed there. Even with an adult, we didn't protest. Sometime later, I described this encounter to my aunt. She looked at me, her face as white as a sheet of paper, but she didn't say anything.
I tried to press her for information, but every time she shook her head and refused to talk about it. Later, I heard their town had a lot of disappearances after our experience, especially kids and homeless people. I don't know if these things are related, but something tells me that they are. Both my sister and I get shivers whenever we talk about it, considering how close we were to getting abducted or even killed. I now know about crawlers, rakes, wendigos, and I believe that's what we may have met. Hello. I'm writing this as my final goodbye. I have been documenting everything for the past 1 or 2 weeks, I think. I've lost track of time. I think they're going to kill me. I can't find my way back, so I'm leaving this here for someone to find and bring back to the world, so they could at least know what happened to me. If you're seeing this, do not go into the Sand Oro Ranch woods. Document 1, December 1st, 2017. Okay. I moved into a new house. It also has a farm. It's a nice place. It's in an opening of the Sand Oro Ranch woods. There's no city for miles. I like the sharp, cool wind on my fingertips while I watch the sunset. The meadows, going one for at least a half a mile. The smell of the clean, crisp air. The woods surrounding the meadows, breaking at the road. As I started unpacking the moving van, I remembered something the old owners had said. Don't go into the woods. I'm not sure why, but I'm not sure if I want to find out. Document 2, December 3rd, 2017. I finished unpacking the moving van around 12 last night. Nothing had happened yet, but I still can't get what the old owners had said out of my head. Don't go to the woods. To be honest, I think that's why they sold this land for so cheap. One of the reasons I bought this land was because of how cheap it was. Only $150,000. Are you sure? Yep. Just promise me one thing. What is that? Don't go into the woods. I agreed. And after that, I signed some papers, and that was that. I'm still unsure why he told me not to go into the woods. When I pressed him about it, he either got mad or changed the subject. It was odd, but I thought maybe there's dangerous wildlife or something else reasonable. Document 3, December 5th, 2017. I had some trouble sleeping last night. Before I went to sleep, I went to watch the sunset. When I looked out into the forest, I saw some shadows moving. After the sun set, it was pitch black. I went to go in, but before I saw a fire in the forest. Not a forest fire, but more like a bonfire type of thing. It startled me at first, but then I thought maybe it was poachers, and that was one of the reasons why I was told not to go into the woods. Don't go into the woods. I didn't want them to mistake me for game, so I went to bed. I couldn't sleep, though. Even though there was random people on my property, they also started singing loudly, which didn't help. Document 4, December 6, 2017. It's around 2:40 in the morning, and they're still singing, or so I thought. When they came back around sunset and lit the fire at dark, it creeped me out. I listened to the song they were singing this time, but I'm starting to realize they're not singing. They're chanting. It sounded like some foreign language. I'm going to take a closer look. I just need to remember where I put my pistol. Document 5, December 6, 2017. I'm in trouble. I tried to get out of the forest, but I couldn't find the exit. I didn't even go in that deep. It's like some magical spell took out the exit. At this point, I wouldn't be surprised. Let me say what happened. I walked to that bonfire, and the first thing I saw was a bunch of people in black clothing. Their faces were normal, aside from their cuts on their cheeks making their smiles bigger. There was a person floating over the fire, literally floating. As soon as they saw me, they stopped chanting and the person fell into the fire and started screaming. I pulled out my pistol and shot one of them. They started chanting again, except it sounded different. They started floating, and a creature came from the bushes. That's when I noticed the upside-down pentagram around the fire. At this point, I didn't care though. When I saw the creature, I'm pretty sure I pissed myself. It was on two long 5-foot legs, and it had a hunchback. Its arms were around 4 feet long. Instead of fingers, it had long claws. Its eyes were empty and blood was dripping out of them. Its jaw hung open, exposing its row of razor-sharp teeth, or rows. Its teeth were stained with blood and pieces of flesh hanging to it, drool dripping down its chin. I sprinted towards the exit of the forest. The thing came after me. I tripped and crawled behind a log. It ran past looking for me, not knowing I fell and hid. I hid for about 8 minutes, then started running again. After 5 minutes, I noticed that something was off. It didn't take this long to get in, so I didn't know what was taking this long to get out. I noticed how dark it was, so I slumped against a tree to get some rest. I'm going to get some rest and then try to figure this out in the morning. Document 6, December 7th, 2017. It could smell me. At first I didn't think it could smell, but I think it evolved. I don't know how, but it's been looking in the same areas right next to me, looking for me for hours. I first noticed this when I woke up. It's also fairly attracted to the log I tripped on. I don't know why. I'm looking for a chance to run, but it's been circling me. If I don't do something soon, it's going to find me. Document 7, December 8th, 2017. It bit my foot off. I didn't see it. I have my shirt wrapped around my leg to stop the blood loss. It was around noon and I thought it ran off, so I sprinted to try to find the exit again. I ran past a bush and it jumped out and bit my foot. I screamed and pulled out my pistol. I shot and it whimpered and backed off. I hopped to a tree where I'm currently writing this. I'm beginning to feel dizzy. Document 8, December 8th, 2017. Hello. I'm writing this as my final goodbye. I've lost too much blood. I'm dying. I have been documenting everything for the past 1 or 2 weeks, I think. I've lost track of the time. I think it's going to kill me. It could smell my blood. I can't find my way back. So I'm leaving this here for someone to find and bring back to the world, so they could at least know what happened to me. If you're seeing this, do not go into the San Oro Ranch woods. For a number of years, I was a camp counselor at an overnight camp in the Muskokas. I loved it more than any job I've ever had, despite the non-existent pay, annoying campers, long days and short nights, crappy food, etc. For one, I got to tell as many scary stories as I could sputter out. There was nothing better than hanging around a dying campfire with a bunch of junior high kids who were demanding the scariest, most blood-curdling tales I knew. And I told them all. The babysitter and the eerie clown statue, the driver and the creepy gas station attendant, the woman and her licking dog. I saved my best stories for the overnight trips we made in the Algonquin Park, for non-Canadians. It's a massive park in the middle of Ontario, spanning nearly 8,000 square kilometers. When days would be spent canoeing on pristine lakes and nights would be spent around the fire, singing and making s'mores, and being as rowdy as the only people within miles could be. Once the kids had quieted down, I told them stories of a stalker in the woods with a face so terrifying it paralyzed all of its victims in fear. Or the group of campers who decided to spend a night across the lake from an abandoned, or was it, insane asylum. This one particular night, I finished up the tales, once again insisting that they were entirely true, and sent the campers to their tents. It had been an exhausting day, and none of the six kids were in any mood to stay up later. My fellow counselor had also decided to pack it in, leaving just me on the fallen log next to the dying fire. I took a deep breath of the cool, fresh pine-scented air and looked out at the lake. The partial moon reflected off the glassy water, and on the other side I could see towering cliffs going up several hundred feet. I considered whether we can canoe over, climb up a few dozen feet, and do some cliff jumping. I grinned. The camp director would have my head if we did that. If he found out. Movement at the very top of the cliffs caught my eye. There was a small light bobbing along the peak. At first, I thought it was a star, but it was larger and gave off a golden glow. It slowly moved back and forth in a small arc. As I sat up and watched it, another appeared next to it, bobbing along the top of the cliff. Then another, and another, and a few more. My stomach dropped into my feet. I grabbed my bag and pulled my digital camera out, then focused in on the little glowing orbs and used the zoom function. I counted them, and then I counted again. Oh, shit. In a flash, I was up and running to the tents. Hey, guys, wake up! We gotta go! There was movement in the tents, and then I had several confused heads looking out at me. My co-counselor wore a mixture of concern and pure anger. I hate to do this, I continued, but the clouds are looking really threatening. There's a big rainstorm coming in. If we get caught in it, it's going to ruin our trip. Seriously, Laura? My co-counselor asked. We're in the middle of the woods. Where would we go? I pulled a map and flashlight out of my bag. There's a ranger station a few kilometers south of us. I traced the path with my finger. Thank God. We can make it in a few hours. The campers groaned. We can't just go in the morning. No! I shouted, my voice echoing across the lake. I lowered it. Come on, let's just get packed up and go. I'll tell you a story along the way. I smiled, though I could feel my lips quivering. It's one of my best. That seemed to get them going, and within 10 minutes, the tents were packed up and we began our trek into the deep woods, with small flashlights as our only guide. When I was confident we were moving at a steady pace, I allowed myself to relax and began to tell my favorite campfire story. Centuries before the European settlers made their way into the country, it was inhabited by the First Nations people. They had made the trip from across Western Canada, following the migration patterns of large animals, such as buffalo and bison. Eventually, they reached Ontario, at which point they split off into smaller groups of travelers, each searching for a section of land to call their own. Legend has it that one group, consisting of about 20 men, women, and children, had ventured through this very area in search of a place to call home. Though it wasn't even the end of October, the weather had made a turn for the worse. And as the group journeyed around the lake, a fierce blizzard hit. Within an hour, the group found themselves in blinding snow and below zero temperatures. The clothes they had on them were made for fall, not this sort of weather, and there wasn't any Canadian goose jackets around back then. But they pressed on. They didn't have any other choice. Night was falling as they reached the cliff bluff, which towered over a cold, choppy lake. There was no stopping for this group. They'd die if they didn't make it past the cliffs. But with darkness settling in and the snow falling even harder, visibility was almost non-existent. So one of the elders had an idea. Using the little kerosene they had left, he lit a lantern for each of the travelers they had to carry it in front of them, not so that they could see the cliffs, but so they could see who was in front of them, allowing them to all follow each other across the narrow bluffs. With the strongest of the men leading the way, the group began to cross the bluffs. The freezing wet snow soaked every bone in their body. The harsh wind chilled any exposed skin and threatened to push them right off the rock. Their path was no more than a few feet wide, and would have been slippery to even the best hiking boots, let alone hand-fashioned moccasins. Slowly, painstakingly slowly, they made their way up the cliffs, praying that whatever lay on the other side would shelter them from the intensifying storm. They were about halfway up, hundreds of feet above the lake, though it was well out of their vision. In fact, all they could see in this blinding storm was the lantern in front of them, acting as a beacon to guide their steps. If the light moved up, they moved up. If it went down, they moved down. Each of the travelers was almost in a trance, caring about nothing but the glowing orb a few feet away. For the leader, though, there was no such luxury. He moved forward blindly, feeling along the cliff with his free arm, though his skin was so numb he could barely feel anything. As the path wound back again, he made a misstep and lost his footing, just as a gust of wind blasted his back. He desperately grabbed for the hold, but his frozen fingers couldn't get anything. With a terrified scream, he slipped off of the cliffs and fell into the icy black lake. The rest of the party didn't see him fall, of course. All they saw was his glowing orb drop away from the bluff and disappearing into the darkness. There was no time to mourn. They continued on, but the storm was worsening. After another minute, one of the children, his body unable to withstand the cold, dropped away, his lantern glowing until the choppy waters put it out. Another, having seen this, lost his balance and fell. This pattern went on until there was just 5 people left, fumbling along in the darkness following the light in front. As hard as they tried, the cliffs were unforgiving. The remaining men fell down to 4, then 3, and 2. And then there was just one left, whose legend says cursed the earth as his legs slipped and he plunged hundreds of feet down, his lantern the last one to be extinguished. Of the 20 members who tried to overcome the cliffs, I finished, not one of them survived. They say that sometimes, when the conditions are right, you can see the orbs along the cliff, symbols of the lost travelers who will never find their homes. As the story ended, leaving the campers in an eerie silence, I saw lights up ahead. A wave of relief poured over me. We picked up the pace and found the ranger station bursting with activity, with a half dozen people running around, loading up trucks and shouting into radios. The wind was beginning to really pick up, and I heard thunder in the distance. "Hey, you kids?" A large, burly man with a full beard and mustache ran up to us. "Get in the trucks, we don't have much time." Laura and I led the kids into one of the pickup trucks. "What's going on?" I asked the man. "Didn't you hear? Another gust of wind. Huge storm system heading right for us. Already been tornadoes touched down, too. We're getting everyone out of here. Let's go." We all climbed into the truck's bed. I collapsed down, feeling like I had just been punched in the gut. The ranger climbed into the front, and we took off down a makeshift road. My head was spinning. It wasn't possible. "How?" Laura slid next to me, keeping her voice low. "How did you know that we had to get out of there?" I looked over at her. My face felt empty with any blood. "I saw the lights." What? No. No. She gasped, then caught herself. How many? I took a deep breath. 8. She looked around at all the campers who were now lying against each other, asleep despite the bumpy road. That's all of us. My God. I nodded and leaned against her. Laura had heard the traveler's story before, and she knew that I had left out a key bit of information. The lights were real, but they were never random. If they were shining, bobbling back and forth, swinging in a small arc, it was because they had a message, a warning. One light would shine for each person who was about to die.